The English people have turned into dogs, and the English people have turned into Scottish people. And it may be that this is necessary. It may be that this needed to happen before it was too late. But I never thought I'd sit here and say that the English have turned into dogs and Scottish people, but they have. And they've been forced to turn into dogs and Scottish people by what they see as the invasion of their country and the endangerment of their daughters, which is happening everywhere across the country this summer, which is happening all over the place, which is happening in places that were previously completely protected from this kind of thing because they were in the shires and they were 100% or around 100% white. But no, in their wisdom, the government has placed so-called migrants with certain inclinations in hotels in these kinds of places, and suddenly people have been thrust almost overnight from a homogenous and safe society into something very, very different, and they are uniting against it, and they are protesting against it, and then the thugs, the bully boys, the paid bully boys and intimidators of the government, the sort of every government has these kinds of people, that the tolerated, enforcing, violent or intimidating yobs of stand up to racism are sent in to cower them, to upset them, to intimidate them, or perhaps, I don't know, if we're to follow some kind of conspiracy of woke eugenics, to provoke them and make it worse. But anyway, the result is a kind of immune system response. The result is something very primal, and that is to turn into dogs and Scottish people. And I'm going to explain how this has happened. Before I do that, could you do me a favour? Could you please subscribe? Could you subscribe on YouTube? And could you subscribe to my Substack? That's johnnyheretic.com, where I put all the most base content, where I post up on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, films I make, all kinds of malarkey. And if you like what I do, you can support me the cost, just a pint of beer a month. Okay, back to the video. So how have we turned into dogs? When I was younger, I had a Springer Spaniel called Chipper, an English Springer Spaniel. And taking him to the park, let him off his lead, was a long process because he would insist on urinating up almost every gatepost that we would pass along the way. And in particular, if a dog, another dog, had urinated on that gatepost, he would spend quite a while sniffing that gatepost in order to discern as much information about that dog as he could, its age, its pedigree, whatever. And then he would cover it with a very large amount of urine. I don't know where he got all that wee from. I mean, it does seem extraordinary that he could produce so much urine. But he would, and then eventually he would get to the park, and off he'd go. Over the last week, I'm recording this on the 19th of August, 2025. Over the last week, the English have been spraying various areas with their collective micturation. And it's about time that they do so. But their micturation is not literal urine. It is a flag. It is the English flag. They have been spraying various areas, lampposts. Dogs often piss up lampposts, but lampposts with the English flag. And this, at the group level, is extremely primal indeed. And it shows you just how much pressure and just how attacked the English people feel that a long latent English nationalism, because remember, it's the Scottish and the Welsh that are more likely to say that they are Scottish and Welsh, and the English that until recently were more likely to say they were British. A long latent English nationalism has been unleashed like a stream of golden urine. And it is glorious, but also quite poignant to see. And it's poignant because of the fact that the English have been pushed to a situation where they have to do this. Now, what is the point of a flag? The point of a flag, quite simply, is to assert this is ours. This is ours. Understand it is ours. And in some ways, it is to preempt any conflict. It is to make it clear to others that might come into your territory. This is our territory, so get out, stay away. We are warning you that this is ours. It belongs to us. That is why we raise the flag, because it's ours, and it's making this clear to others who might attempt to take it, who might attempt to make their way into the territory, that it is ours. So it is an intimidatory signal. That is the point of raising the flag. Raising the English flag, as opposed to the British flag, is even more specific. You could argue, and I think there's a very strong argument for this, that you cannot separate the British from the English flag. Britain is an empire nation, and the absolutely dominant nation of that empire is England. And that empire itself produced an empire, the British Empire, the absolute dominant nation of which is Great Britain. But essentially, it all goes back to England. But the assertion of Englishness is very, very specific, because it is a narrow ethnic identity. And don't let people fool you and say, oh, England's always been diverse. We know that's not true. We have studies that indicate that the English gene pool is very specific. It is separated and very distinct from the French gene pool or the German gene pool or whatever. Of course it is. It's separated off at about 500 AD or 400 AD and essentially was left alone, apart from a few incursions by a small number of Vikings and a small number of Normans, was left alone, isolated, you know, basically endogamous, right up until about 1950. And even then, it's only become majorly unendogamous, probably since about 1970. And there's not much interbreeding between the different groups that have come here with the English. They mainly interbreed with themselves and are themselves endogamous. So the English gene pool hasn't changed. The English gene pool hasn't changed any more than any other gene pool that have been separated off since 500 AD. Would change. It is a separate and distinct gene pool. It is a genetic group. It is a tribe, a genetic group based around shared ancestry. With Britain, it's more complicated because you're talking about the English and the Scottish and the Welsh and the Irish and the other groups, other various offshoots as well. And you could argue that the Australians and the Canadians and even the Americans count as British. But this is very, very, very specific. So it is an assertion of ethnic, of racial identity. It is saying this is the area that belongs to us, the genetic English people who are defined by our shared ancestors and nothing else. We are a people you cannot become. We are a people you are born into. And this is our area. It belongs to us. That is what the flag means. It is marking our territory with Urim. So in that sense, this situation of feeling under threat, of feeling invaded, of feeling out of control, has caused us to mark our territory clearly. It is, in some ways, it could be argued to be the first shots fired by ordinary people, because the Raise the Flag campaign is not some official thing. It's not even led by some far right group. It has emerged. It must have been someone's idea, but it's emerged pretty much organically and spread. And we now see English flags being put up on lampposts all over the place, in London, in Birmingham, in the most Muslim part of London as well, Tower Hamlets, in very foreign parts of Birmingham. And that is the point of it. It is not just, it is to assert in areas where the English feel they have lost part of England, London, Birmingham, whatever. It is to assert this, whether you like it or not, is English territory. And in a way, it's rather bellicose. In a way, it's kind of implying that we will fight for it. Now, what are the parallels? Where else does this happen? I can think of two places. One is Scotland. You will see Scottish flags all over the place. And most obvious is just Northern Ireland. If you go to Northern Ireland in July, there'll be flags hanging from lampposts. And of course, nobody takes them down, because if you were seen doing that, you'd get in serious trouble in parts of Northern Ireland. And so in the marching season, you will see in places like Larne or whatever, British flags all over the place. Now, why do you do that? Well, part of the reason you do that is because the Ulster Scots have always felt under threat. Ever since Ireland was partitioned, they have had to fight for their very existence. They feel that they are fighting all the time, and so they assert themselves. This is our territory. It comes out of a feeling of threat. And in that feeling of threat, the flag is a unitary symbol. Putting up the flag is a way of making people feel better. You assert your power. You assert that you exist. You assert your claims to territory, in particular, if you feel they are threatened, if you feel they are insecure. And this is why, for so long, the English haven't flown the English flag. They haven't needed to. There's been no need. People have been so confident in the power of England as part of Britain and so on that there's no need. Why would you bother? Why would you even bother? There's absolutely no need. It is small, insignificant nations like Finland or Scotland that are forced to be patriotic, that are forced to deal with their own insecurities about their own existence and their own empowerment by asserting themselves and thus making themselves feel powerful and making themselves feel important. And so in this sense, the migrant crisis has made we English know what it feels like to be Scottish or know what it feels like to be Finnish. But then it gets very, very interesting in terms of the symbolism, in terms of what answer this induces from the, or this elicits, I'm sorry, from the powers that be. What are they doing? They're taking the flags down. And that is the equivalent of another dog urinating over your urine. They're taking the flags down. When people spontaneously put up in parts of Birmingham, ethnically diverse. Well, they're not really ethnically diverse. Normally there's one ethnic group that's dominant. Parts of Birmingham or London, Bangladeshi flags on lampposts, or Palestine flags, most prominently, they are not taken down. Or if they are taken down, they're taken down eventually. But no, these flags are taken down immediately. And so the symbolism of that is that this is not English territory. You may not assert that this is English territory. We are frightened of you asserting that this is English territory. And we will make it clear to you symbolically, we will disempower you, we will humiliate your group by taking down your flag, the symbol of you, the symbol that this is yours. But we will not take down Palestine flags because these are acceptable to us. So you can see that the symbolic game here, the authorities say this is not English territory. They say at worst, this is Bangladeshi territory or this is Pakistani territory. And at best, they're saying this is the territory of those of us that believe in internationalism, of those of us that believe in woke. Let's remember all those rainbow flags flying every June, at least until recently. These are the official flags. I was in Guildford a couple of years ago, summer 2023, and there was a rainbow flag flying over Guildford Castle. A castle being a symbol of English history, a symbol of the monarchy, a symbol of all that is English and of English power as well, because castles are, of course, defence mechanisms. And there was a woke flag flying officially over that. So it's them saying, no, the woke flag, the rainbow flag, that is our flag. The flag of Palestine, that is our flag. Foreign flags, they are our flags, because they are, or particularly Palestinian ones, because they represent, they symbolise the empowerment and the dominance of those of us that hold a certain ideology, the woke ideology, the anti-nationalistic ideology. Your flag represents an older worldview. Your flag represents an older idea, and it symbolises ideas and views, nationalism, the very existence of the English people as a separate people, which are repellent to us, which are repugnant to us, and we will symbolically crush them by taking down your flag and by urinating on your urine. Now, of course, one reaction is to be upset by this, is to be in some way kicked in the knackers by this and to feel disheartened. But another reaction is to regard that as a clear provocation. It's forcing them, this flag operation, to either allow English people to assert themselves and to assert their territorial claims, which is extremely dangerous because it could snowball, or it's forcing them to assert themselves back, which is extremely dangerous because it could provoke further nationalistic fervour against this perceived invasion. And I don't know, often the thing is these things happen in the summer and then it gets cold and people stop bothering and they calm down and they're less hot. So it could be that this just peters out. But it is. I've never seen anything like this before. I've never seen such, in 44 years, such unleashed English nationalism, other than in the controlled periods where the government are encouraging it as a kind of outlet. And you get this in tribes. You get this idea, you know, the day where the chief becomes humbled, the humbled chief concept, the role reversals, the lord of misrule. You get things like this. And football seems to be like this. That's when you're allowed to fly the England flag. Because we, those in authority who are actually anti-English, really, but can't quite dare say they're anti-English because we're not at that stage yet where that would be acceptable to enough people, allow people to be nationalistic, but otherwise they don't. Spontaneous nationalism, that is dangerous. Spontaneous, anything is dangerous. If you're a paranoid government that doesn't have the backing of most people, that just uses fear to ride roughshod over their wishes. Spontaneous, anything is bad. That's why they don't like pubs. That's why they're trying to shut down every pub in the land, because it's spontaneous behaviour and they don't like it. They can't control it. Get rid of pubs. Pubs are bad. Shut them down. But spontaneous nationalism, and particularly English nationalism, because it's a dominant nation, is extremely dangerous. And therefore, they have to do something to dishearten people. They have to do something. They have to do something. They know they can't. They daren't do nothing. They have to try to nip it in the bud. They have to make people feel disheartened. But it seems that it's not quite working. So this is a very interesting development. They have managed to turn the kind of thing that Kipling should write a poem about. The day they turned the English into urinating dogs and Scotsmen.
Are you ready for the future of the West?